Your call has been forwarded to an automated voice messaging system.
Hi, Stephen. Frat Boy Randy here. Sorry to call you at 3 in the morning to my mom's house, but I don't know if you have a TV on your boat, but there's a lot going on in the world right now, and it's affecting ice prices. In fact, ice speculation has indicated a dramatic rise. So you might see a 5-pound bag of clear going for double digits. So take that into account as we approach fall on this very volatile market. And well, since I brought fall up, you know I suffer with seasonal anxiety, depression, sad. And what didn't help was my girlfriend of 2.5 seasons, Lydia, left me for an ice road trucker, just driving a damn Peterbilt. Anyway, if you talk to Jay, let him know he left his retainer at my apartment. Stay frosty.
All right, folks, welcome to the Musky 360 Podcast, Jay Bird.
Steve, what is going on?
Buddy, I am just freaking sitting in another crummy hotel room. I'm on the road again this week, folks. That's why I'm a day late and a dollar short.
Ouch.
I was out filming a TV show yesterday.
What TV show were you filming?
Unsolved Mysteries. So a lot of people don't know this, but I saw Squatch.
Oh, no. I was thinking it was Bigfoot.
I saw a big one. And so I stood there and I put a chaw of Red Man in my mouth and said, I've learned when I saw the Sasquatch, he came down the hill and it was so.
Yep. Yeah. Did you get a grainy picture of him?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Basically, Super 8, you just pulled out your Super 8 camera probably and just
got
a little bit of, you know, no audio, just, you know.
Just some grainy.
5 seconds.
Just some grainy Super 8 of Sasquatch walking down a hill in Tennessee. So
150 yards away, so you should be able to zoom in with no clarity.
Right, exactly. It's just going to look like complete crud.
Nice.
You know, I'm living the hillbilly dream, Jay. I saw a Squatch.
Well, I hear they're pretty much everywhere in the continental U.S.
now. I saw a Squatch today.
Did you trust TV?
No, actually, I was out. It was amazing. Filming for okay, I'm not on a Sasquatch show, guys. All right.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't think so, but,
please
continue.
I want to be. So if you know where Sasquatch is, email me. I'm in. If you got an uncle that's overly hairy that we could fake it with, just let me know. No, we were filming a little show. Went out and just kicked the living donkey dong out of muskies. It was amazing. So you'll see that.
Cool.
Once these come out, I did that show in Wisconsin like a week ago or whatever, and I don't want to say what they are because you never know the production schedules, but when I get the go-ahead for when they're going to air these things, I'll let you guys know. It's kind of fun. So
it
is what it is. So what do? You know, you just rock it in the free world, Jay. Rocking
in. Keep on rocking in the free world. You know,
you go, girl. You go, girl. Look at me. Mm-hmm. Shaniqua in the house. Sold out of books a couple days ago. Got those back in stock. So if you're waiting for your copy of Next Level Musky Fishing, those are back in stock. Kind of excited. The Poseidon 8.
Yeah.
They're back.
Yep.
Look who's back. Like Jay's song. Guess who's back? Back again. One thing we're going to cover. 2024 Musky Shop catalog, right?
Yeah.
If you're signed up for the 2023 or heck, 2021, if you're already on the list, you're on the list. You'll get it, right?
Yeah. If you placed an order with us this year,
you'll get it. If you've never done that, if you've never signed up for a catalog, or you've never bought a bait from the Musky Shop, sign up for it. You'll get a catalog. If not, don't sign up, okay? Please. For the love of God.
We got our hands full with the mailing list. We mail a ton of them out, and the catalog comes out. It gets mailed out bulk mail in late January, and we mail it once a year. It's free. It's huge. And everybody, it's a must have for musky anglers. I like that pitch.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing. Don't sign. There's certain people, you know, that might be co-hosts of a podcast that have to deal with CSV files. Please don't sign up for it. If you got last year, So,
okay.
It's called organization. So anyway, Jay brought it up today. The comings and the goings of the Muskie Shop. The cranes are back in stock. They're not going to last long. It's kind of that end of the year shipment. The crane 105s, the 205s, the 206s, 208s, 207s. Get them while you can get them. So,
eight different models in today. So, shipment. So, it's probably it for the year. Probably it till who knows when.
You never know. Crane baits are kind of this anomalous thing where they just do what they do and they do it well. I have a distinct affinity for crane baits, being a West Virginian by birth. And if you've never fished one, it's worth having. Is it the most durable bait? No. Do they do something magical that, you know, I don't know. Dad used to say the fish can smell the balsa wood, Jay.
That might be part of it. I think he's on to something.
Well, he's dead.
Wow.
I'm sorry. I've been in the Pepsis, and that was funny. He's not on to anything. There's a modicum of something about that bait, because it's like the Model T of baits. It's offered in one color, which is fugly. You've got the light color and the dark color, and they just kind of work, and they just kind of manifest fish when nothing else would. I am apologizing right now. I'm in a very large, very gross hotel room, Jay. Like, it's the biggest. Like, I didn't realize a hotel room could be this big and that gross.
Please elaborate on the gross part for me. Paint a picture.
So,
yes, please.
I am in the suite. I can't find the trash can. It is probably about 1,500 square feet in here. The carpet around the tile for the little kitchenette area is frayed, and it's standing up like an afro around the edges.
Cool.
Every tile is cracked. There's a jacuzzi in the room, right?
With water in it? Questionable.
I don't know if it's water or fluids. Let's put it that way. So,
okay.
I imagine if you turn those jets on, you could get pregnant. So, it's just no. No. Dick. No. No. There's mirrors around it. So, it's a mirror jacuzzi. And the bedroom, for some reason, Jay, there's mirrors all the way around the bedroom.
Okay.
I don't know why. Who gets dressed and needs to, like, really see themselves that much?
Well, Tennessee is for lovers. the Sunshine State.
It's kind of despicable in here. It's like, I don't want to touch anything because I know what's happened here.
Okay. Enough. That's good. I'm good.
It's like Jay's band name, Lowbrow Romance. It's not a bad band name. If you need a band name, Lowbrow Romance, you can have it. No, it's gross. it's just gross. I'm totally grossed out by everything. I don't want to touch anything in here. So I apologize about being a second behind. One thing that's coming up, other than the ice up, is the holiday season.
Yeah.
Tell your wives we have e-gift cards and tell them to check it out. There's a bunch of little accoutrements. So you got the gift section on the website right now of some different things that are coming up there. Man, we're just getting to that nitty gritty, Jay. It's kind of crazy. Today was the first day I was wearing my snowsuit.
Yeah, you told me.
It was miserable.
Chilly.
I just wanted to step off the boat into the abyss. So I want to do that every day, but today it was worse. It was just worse. The feelings of stepping, it's crackling signal sucks. I apologize.
Well, when the podcast is done, you got the whirlpool, you got the jacuzzi, you know, turn up the jets, up the heat and just,
God, no.
Bathe in elegance.
Bathe in, it's,
you know what? You know what else we got in, Steve? I didn't mention it was those hot tails. We got a ton of hot tails in last week.
Ruh-roh.
Yeah, I think between podcasts here. And those are those high-end custom-made gliders that take, I mean, I know I ordered these like 4 months ago. So, you know, he does small batches. So, I mean, just for those that have been looking for some cool glide baits, we got a bunch of new ones in there on the top of the, of that section on the website that's called, you know, new and exciting.
Yeah. It's very at the top. You got the, I'm seeing it right now. You got the Nugget. You got the Hot Tail Mini Diving Rise.
Cool.
Anthony makes killer stuff. You get the regular, the Enticer, the Lockjaw Crank. So, and that's going to play for a lot of your Kentucky, West Virginia. We don't get ice fisheries, right? I break out my hot tails about November, right? That November, December, January time.
Mm-hmm.
And Anthony understands, like, the dude that runs Hot Tails and makes these baits, he is fishing throughout the course of the winter, and it's a really good time for that erratic deep presentation. They're going to run a little bit deeper than you expect them to, which is where you need to be that time of year. So those are cool baits. What else?
Yeah.
Krakens are almost here, by the way. They're on their way.
Yeah, they're on their way.
So a lot of people are asking, if you haven't signed up, sign up for them. But it's interesting, that bait. Oh, my goodness, dude. I don't even need to say it. Herbeck's been saying it. I'm just over talking about it. But prepare thine self.
a lot of giant fish caught on it.
Yeah.
And numbers, too. So impressive debut with the prototypes. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, first cast for Jay, he was cracking on the Kraken. And
Forget about it.
So it's been pretty interesting. Other than that, I am cold. I am tired. It has been just an insane week. Working on projects, like I said, filming TV stuff, getting ready for just the winter Guidetopia. You know, it's funny, other podcasts try to talk about fishing down where I'm at, and it's like, okay, yeah, that's cute. But the South is about to fire up and the North is about to shut down. What I'm seeing, from my perspective, I think it is going to be a cold winter.
I hope not.
I'm telling you.
Okay.
I'm seeing it. You know, it is falling off a cliff. We got some ups, we got some downs, but it seems like it's established itself as cold.
I don't like that trend.
I mean, you got a couple warm up days, you got this, you got that, but we're pushing into the latter part of October here. And it's going to fall off a cliff. I'm not big on the old Farmer's Almanac or anything, but
a couple weeks ago here, they said, you know, they forecasted above average temperatures for October. It's been below average the last 2 weeks. So really getting water temps down. Lakes are, you know, a lot of the lakes are turning over right now. You know, Frosty went out yesterday and, you know, he had 47 to 51 on the, you know, the mid-sized lakes he was on. Cool. Well,
yeah, exciting. So
getting down there quick.
Well, if you're up there, if you're up in the Northwoods, be thinking suckers.
Yeah.
Have a sucker. Be thinking tubes. Be thinking rubber. Get down to where the fish are. When it comes to turnover, check out the app. There's a ton of old stuff on turnover or the Muskie Shop blog or whatever to explain it to you. But you're going to have to be versatile. You're going to have to, like, work rubber baits and get where the fish are. I mean, I think the trick with turnover is they could be anywhere. Booker and I talked about on a tactical podcast about just avoid lakes that are turning over. That's a pretty solid game plan. So, you know, if you're thinking the South over the winter, you know, down where I'm at, January and February are probably the prime months. There's a lot to that. We've got some big fish water, but if you're like focused on, I have to go north, Minnesota, Wisconsin, you're getting down to the nitty gritty here pretty soon, Jay. When do you think realistically we should be thinking ice?
Mid-sized lakes. It could be Thanksgiving.
Which is
out of the realm of possibility, which is a month from now, which is 5 weeks.
which is painful to think
what
about.
What is today? 16th? Something like that?
It's just another fresh hell. Well, I don't keep a calendar. What?
It's just a number.
Just a number. just a painful number. Counting the days by suffering on the water. So if I'm in the north right now and things are turning over and things are getting kind of nasty, suckers, absolutely, suckers, suckers, suckers. Muskie Shop has phenomenal suckers in stock.
Yep.
The cool thing with that, they're not farm raised, they're fresh caught.
Yeah, they're trapped. They're wild. Yes.
Yes. You want them wild ones.
You see that one Elmer tried to manhandle a couple weeks ago? Got him on film doing it? Crazy.
Wow.
He was giggling like a little kid.
Wow.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
But
Elmer wrestling big suckers. You know, 18 inchers. I mean, these things are thick around the shoulders, man. They're powerful.
Elmer wrestling a thick 18 incher, everybody.
Yeah. That was yep.
Whoa.
Giggling.
Whoa. Yeah, he was giggling, I bet.
Oh, sure.
Jay, have you ever wrestled a thick 12 incher?
I got no comment on that.
Anyway, but getting those wild caught suckers are going to be a little more robust. So, sucker fishing, but I think the combination that's important during this period up there is going to be big rubber and some deeper running glide baits, right?
Yeah.
We're a month, theoretically, worst case scenario, a month out from ice, right? Something can happen, and it can be crazy, and things could go, you know, drastic warm up, and we're completely wrong. But the way it's trending, things are getting colder. Toothy Tufts, you know, your Poseidons, well, I'm just thinking out loud here from this filthy hotel room. Poseidons, you know, your jerk baits.
Yeah, take your Titans and your Suix, and that's when you break out the weight kits and you add more weight and you get those things neutral and you get really down there and hang great.
Well, hang, but, you know, I'm going to go more big rubber, though. As much as I love to say throw a Titan, you could do your double weight kit or do this, but I want to have really prime condition for that. If you got off days or you got kind of cruddy stuff, you know, from the second I hit the water to the time I'm putting her on the ramp, throw big rubber, you know, throw different sized dogs, throw a double dog, throw this, throw that, throw your Medusas, your Poseidons, your swimming dogs, get things down. Fish seem to be down right now. They're down with the thickness, Jay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it seems to be that there's a opportunity for big rubber always. Obviously an opportunity for sucker fishing. So consider that if you're in the north. You go slightly south of that, the Ohio, West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, where I'm at. You know, things are transitioning. There was a really tight little sweet shallow bite. Hopefully it'll come back. But it's looking big rubber and big nasty here already. So get comfortable with those big rubber presentations or be thinking about how do I implement these things on these structural edges and things of that nature, because it's just falling off a cliff.
Yeah. You know, there's some great tips on how to retrieve big rubber on next level muskie fishing in the video. I think if you go in at 103, that's not 1 minute 3 seconds, that's 1 hour 3 minutes mark.
Uh-huh.
That's when your big rubber section starts.
Dun, dun, dun.
Don't quote me on the time there, the time frame, but it's right around there.
Yeah, if you've not seen that, we got on the Muskie Shop thing. I did a super long video where me talkie. So you have that.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great stuff.
What do you do, Jay? Oh, excuse me. I'm hacking, folks. Do you know what happens to me every year, Jay?
Allergies.
Yeah. I look like I smoked 7 pounds of weed this morning when I woke up. Just blasted out of my head. Eyes are just red as you can get. It just kills me. So if I'm coughing, I apologize. What are you going to do?
It must be the ragweed.
Man, I don't know, but what?
Coontail.
coontail.
I don't know what affects you.
Well,
nobody does.
Everything and nothing. Sorry about the sneezing fit, Jay. You said, nobody wants to hear that. I apologize. That is the time I ate chips at Jay's house.
Yeah, I remember.
But now this time of year just kills me. So, I went out today and it was interesting. I was out with a good friend of mine. He's a podcast listener, Gary. And we went out and it was just brutal. Just brutal, where you had this shift, you had this low-hanging clouds came in, you had the drizzle, you had everything that looked great. And it took a while for me to make an assessment and make a change in the game plan because it had been working for so long, right? So I'm throwing Krakens, I'm throwing crankbaits and all this stuff. Then we finally start moving them off the bottom and you're going, why do these fish, why is it like, you have a warmer surface temp, and they're just tight to the bottom. And, we had some action where it was like jigging bondies and you're going, oh, why would we have to do this? And I think that this time of year, you're just making these changes of just switching things up so heavily. Do you hear that, Jay?
Yeah, yeah.
That is horrific, folks. That is the heater in this horrible hotel room. Sorry, I apologize. But it's cold. But, you make these changes to your game plan, it'll stop any moment. It's done.
One of those radiators?
Yeah, it's gross in here. And basically, I have bed bugs. But this time of year, we talked in the last couple weeks about how hot that shallow water bite was, right, Jay?
Yeah.
Get on it. But be versatile. When you have these fronts come through and you have these changes, you have to augment your game plan where, put the bucktails down, put the topwater down, which has been the game plan, or it might your dive and rise, or it might be your crankbaits. These fish will go low and slow on you real fast. So be aware of that and just be prepared for changing things up on a dime is something we need to be looking at. That West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, your Ohio, it's coming. It's going to happen. We've talked about it. Your shallow bite might be diminished, but you can get a bite. You can get action if you go low and slow. And in a week, things could warm up and we'll be like, whoa, it's unseasonably warm or whatever it might be. It's just a volatile period.
Again, it's a seasonal thing that you observe about this time every year.
Every year,
is what
you're
saying? Yep. Okay.
Light in the dark, Jay. But you have volatility across the board. So volatile conditions demand that we're versatile. So today, the way we're able to get in front of some fish was augmenting everything I've been doing for 3 days, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was just filming there for Unsolved Mysteries. And, they had me reenact. So, Jay, what they said, throw at the bank just like you did when Sasquatch came down the hill, right? And I said, well, we call him the Wendigo where I'm from. And they said, well, whatever, it's interchangeable. So I take my bulldog, I throw it at the shore, and I look at it mesmerized. Oh, no, there's a Sasquatch. Cameras on my face, right?
Because they like to wash their food at the bank before they eat it.
Well, like a raccoon, obviously. We don't. If you don't know that, exactly. You're an idiot. Yeah.
I know. Sorry.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
But nonetheless.
Sorry.
Worst podcast ever. Nonetheless. Right up there. Nonetheless, it is. Went out for that filming of Unsolved Mysteries and was like, boom, 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 fish, 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 fish.
Mm-hmm.
You got to let go of patterns this time of year, right? Every day is a different day. It's a new day. We have to make an assessment where all day today I was going baits deep. And I think probably what I did today that was incorrect is I didn't augment the game plan soon enough. And I'm not perfect. And sorry, Gary, but, I didn't change it up soon enough because I've been on a tear. It was so good, right, that you're going, I know I'll find one that'll eat X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, well.
And it didn't happen. And so you've got to be observant. You've got to be looking at things through a very, 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 very dialed in eye right now, because it can change on a dime. Is it mid, shallow, deep? Make an assessment and dial in from there. Anyway, I will shut up. I will digress. Let's do some Q&A. What do you think, Jay?
Certainly.
Certainly. Hold on. It's time for a Pepsi. Jay, do you have a Pepsi in your hand? I'm going to... Delicious. Nate. Yum. Hey, guys. First off, I want to say I love the podcast. Meow.
Meow.
It helps me get through my mid-shift as a police officer, so thank you. Oh. Yes.
Nice.
Secondly, I want to change my line brand to Bee Spray. However, I see it comes in cabbage green and tannic brown. I'm unsure which color to choose. Flexa fish are viewed as air in Phelps and Lake of the Woods. Any insight would be greatly appreciated. Thank you. Hey, Nate, and this is corny, and I'm in a mood. Thank you for what you do. So, civic servants, there's a bunch of cops who listen to this show. I'm rambling. I'm in a dirty hotel room. I've been drinking, Jay.
There's a lot of... Wow.
If you're a cop and you listen to this show, I didn't murder a hooker in here, okay? Didn't happen. There's a lot of police officers that listen to this show and a lot of truck drivers, because they spend a lot of car time, and a lot of factory workers, so... Mm-hmm. Truckers, cops, factory workers, you guys are listening to this. That's awesome. You know, and we do appreciate, because I actually, somebody that we like on the podcast, we use on intros and as a guest, he's a cop. It's hilarious. So thank you for what you do, Nate. I'm not trying to be corny, but that is a thankless job anymore. So I
second that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Come on, dude. In this day and age, that ain't Andy Griffith stuff. You're out there dealing with some stupid idiots. Yeah. Yep. I'm about to get loose, Jay. We already, folks, we already had to edit one out. Okay, so if there's gaps, Steve's a little loose in the tongue tonight. But thank you for what you do. That's much appreciated. Line caller. So right now I have what I call frog shit green on my rod. It is neon green. It is ridiculous looking, and who cares? And then, like, I have, like, brown on some other rods and trolling rods. Don't think about line color. So we were testing here very shortly. There should be a line from Livingston. We're hoping there'll be, like, a really budget-friendly line.
Okay.
I've been throwing. We did a color sample, and it was the Technicolor Dreamcoat. It was rainbow colored. It was ridiculous. It was, like, wave your happy flag.
Okay.
Every color of the rainbow and one spool. Didn't matter. So in the past years back, just to be a petulant piece of crap I am, I fish rainbow card line. I have pink line, blue line. It doesn't matter. Don't overthink line color. Whatever you can get. It's funny. You'll see like moss green always sells out, right? So.
Number one. Yeah.
Number one is moss green, and then you have tannic brown. It doesn't matter. I promise you it doesn't matter. If they're picking up on that, if we are worried about line color, then now we're worried about hooks and snaps. It's such a thin diameter, and especially at depth, I don't think they perceive it.
I agree.
I've never felt like line color is going to matter with muskies. I'm the same guy that'll tell you that you could, you know, whatever. I could get off the rabbit hole. I was talking today on the boat about there's a lot of things that are said in muskie fishing where people say things because they think they have to say something to be self-important, right? Whether it be days on the calendar, or some new concept or something of this or something of that nature. Prove it, right? And so if I can catch fish in ultra sheer, clear water and pink line or red line, it doesn't matter. Grab it and go. You're not going to miss fish or lose fish because of line color. I really don't believe that. I fished black line before. Action, profile, lure color. That's a hierarchy, right, Jay? So we always talk about what matters. Let's talk about what matters in muskie fishing. Speed, right?
Yep.
Action, right? Size, then color. Then we're down to, does the leader material matter? Right? And we're so far down the signal chain when it comes to line color. Don't worry about it. If you find something on sale and it's like neon green, that's what I'm fishing right now. I'm fishing, what is it, Suffolk Performance J or whatever it is? Like the crazy green.
Yeah, that high-vis green. Yeah, I think you are. Yeah.
I'm fishing that on my reels. It's Suffolk, but over the ridiculous. We had a bunch of it laying around. That's what's on my rods because I don't care. It's not. It's changed nothing. Much like people have a confidence bait, they have a confidence line color, which is moss green, tannic brown. It doesn't matter. Don't worry about it. If they're focused on the line, then your action size and profile are wrong. You know, then we got a problem with hooks. Then we got a problem with this, and we got a problem with that. So don't overthink it. It's not going to matter. It's not. It's people on social media waxing eloquent about things they don't know anything about when they're talking line collar. Don't worry about it. Anthony, I've noticed over the years, some of the Minocqua area lakes I fish have a tendency to be mainly morning lakes or evening lakes. Is that something can be explained, or is it just a lake quirk? Also, remind me, my friend Adam, he's a ding dong. He's got a dig. Adam, you're a ding dong for Lazy Jang and upper 40s chunky tuna. Oh Adam. Oh, Jay.
No. Oh, that poor guy.
3, 2, 1, call Adam a ding dong. 3, 2, 1, ding dong. Adam, don't Lazy J a chunky 40 boy.
Not gonna do it.
Not gonna do it. Don't do it. Every figure eight.
Be prudent.
I basically, in the any given day, Jay, I make 7 casts. That's how good my figure eights are.
And how long they are.
Apparently. Yeah, it never ends.
Wow.
You never know when they're going to show up.
Right.
Never do a Lazy Jay. Come on now. Can I start the podcast next week, guys? It's no more Jaybird. It's Sup Lazy Jay.
Lazy Jaybird?
Lazy Jaybird. But you got to do something. Don't. It's every time with these freaking fish. You're staring at a squirrel. You're thinking about something else. That's when they're behind you. Don't do a Lazy J. I've seen it happen. I do them. I've screwed the proverbial pooch on more fish than I care to say over the years on a Lazy J.
So. I can't tell you how many times I've been busted staring at a squirrel.
Staring at a squirrel. But, I just took a wonderful swig of
Yuck.
Crystal Light there. My Crystal Light smells of elderberries. Morning lakes, night lakes. Jay, we know a midday lake.
Yeah. Yeah.
Legitimately. There's a lake.
We sure do.
There's a lake that we fish on. If you go there in the morning, guess what happens? Nothing. If you go in there in the evening, nothing happens. But at 12 to 4, it's cracking. And I've done it in the summer, the spring, the fall.
Yeah.
You will find lakes that respond as morning, evening, whatever. There's so many bodies of water up there where you have clear, tannic, turbid, you name it. The cool thing in the North Woods or in the Northern Zone is play that hand. You know, make an assessment. Go out to, say, Lake X, Y, and Z, and you go, well, we always see fish in the morning, but you never see them in the evening. So you've done that for a season, right? And the other lakes, you always see them in the evening. Make a game plan where you go, this is my morning lake, this is my midday lake, and this is my evening lake. That's 100%. How you play that card. It exists. You're not making it up. A decade ago, what I would call phooey, right? And we all live, I would call horse poopy is what I'm saying. Oh, phooey. Okay. I'm trying to be nice. But
yes.
I've seen it with my own two eyes. There's the one lake that we love that's like That is an afternoon, midday lake.
Consistently.
Regardless of conditions. Cold front, warm front.
Yeah.
If you don't have a fish in the boat by five, go somewhere else.
Pretty much.
They exist. The lakes that I know they're like really petulant like that, where it's like a midday, a morning or whatever, they're small bodies of water. What I think is going on is there's a forage movement pretty much every day at some point. So you've not lost your mind. There are lakes that respond in that nature. Just be aware of it and play your hand, because you can really do some danger. Okay, let's make it up. I don't want to be on Lake Chesterfield in the morning, because Chesterfield is a night bite or an evening bite, but Lake Pall Mall is a midday bite.
Well, you're just saying about forage movement. I was just thinking, you know, it's just like, okay, some of the bigger lakes, what have you, there might be minor movements of the forage. They kind of just stage off a little bit after their morning thing. But on this certain lake, there's a major movement, a major shift, and the food base follows it. And that's why that's a theory. It could have something to do with it.
What I think, and I'm just riffing here, and this is a gross generality. Your clear bodies of water up there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like where you film on the Muskie Shop shorts or Kentuck or some of these bodies of water. The clear bodies of water to me seem to be evening bodies of water, right?
Yeah.
Your stained bodies of water seem to be midday. All right? The morning bodies of water, I'm far too hungover to know, Jay.
Yeah, I know a few. I mean, I know a few we haven't been on, you know, that are, I mean, it's pretty obvious that there's a really good morning bite and has something to do probably with fishing pressure and overall boating pressure.
Traffic.
There's a few lakes around here. It's just high traffic kind of thing. So,
well, some of the bigger bodies water, you know, it's like a morning thing or a night thing. So there's some lakes up there that are night lakes. I don't want to spot burn or anything like that, but there's a few that are like night lakes, and I'm just teasing. I mean, we got a couple morning lakes up our sleeve where you go, okay, sun up to 10, and if it doesn't happen by then, move on.
Mm-hmm.
When you have the luxury of so many bodies of water, don't just go clear, stained, turbid, tannic. Go morning, evening, night, and play that rotation. So you can have a game plan. So we hit our morning lake and nothing happened, but where am I going to fish in the middle of the day? Pull it out, go get a sandwich, launch, whatever. And that's the neat thing. So, you know, most people are rolling their eyes and going, man, I'm stuck on one body of water, which is most of the year for me. But if you're up there, man, you can really do a lot of damage by lake hopping. You know, I've seen it so often where some of these really, really tannic lakes, they love the late afternoon and the late evening, right? And these clear lakes love just late evening, or they love, you know, whatever. I'm not going to go to the remote. Jerry, looking for a good all-around reel for my Mojo St. Croix heavy action rod. What do you think, Jay?
Say again, what?
It wasn't complicated.
I could barely hear you. Go ahead. Say that again.
You know, he's looking for a great all-around reel for a Mojo rod. 6-3-1, what do you recommend? 6-3-1 is going to be your best all-around reel.
For an all-purpose setup, if this is a rod and reel combo that you're going to use for an all-purpose situation, throwing a wide variety of stuff, bucktails, a lot of jerkbaits, you know, not your heavy plastics, all that. But, you know, say 1 to 4 ounce kind of range, 6-3-1 retrieve ratio, something around 30, 32 inches of line reeled in per turn. It's going to get the job done effectively, and you're not going to have
what?
Too fast.
Such as what reel? Like a Beast, or what do you think?
I would go with the regular Tranks, not the high speed. I would go with a Daiwa Alexa, one of the TWs. They make 6.3s, something in the, you know, 30, 32-inch range. You know, it's dependent on the size of the reel, too, because if it's a large frame reel, A slower gear ratio could be the same as a small frame reel and a high gear ratio. So look at the line per turn and you get something in around 30, 32 inches, and you'd be super happy as an all-purpose platform.
Cam says, Steve, obviously sucker fishing in late October through November, December is a big deal in the northern habitat range for muskies. I was curious if live bait for suckers, live bait slash suckers, is a thing in the southern habitat zone during late fall, winter period. Absolutely. The problem is the acquisition thereof. I've sort of got a workaround for that. But live bait's effective in cold water periods anywhere you go, right?
Sure.
So as things cool down, a lot of times we're bringing a fish in and they're going, hey, I don't know, And that live bait's going to help seal the deal. A live bait will also pull them off the bottom. So, you know, you have to get your hands on a sucker, you know, West Virginia, Kentucky, Ohio, Tennessee, Pennsylvania. Have some live bait and procure them ahead of time, right? Don't wait until it's the cold weather period. So if you can get them, they're going to work. Jordan, what would be some baits to throw from the bank in the Kanawha River in West Virginia, going up for the week and going to be fishing for the evening after work? Any help is appreciated. Kanawha, you got the Kanawha, the Little Kanawha.
Big River?
Yeah, I mean.
Is it? Okay.
You're going to have to stay mobile this time of year, depending on water temps. Obviously, from the bank, you don't know. But, you know, let's say 50s, 60s, whatever. West Virginia is glide bait country. They love them. Crane baits. Cranks and glides are going to be my ticket, especially if you're bank fishing. Jay perfected the little-known tactic of bondy jigging from the bank. just sit there for hours. Just one spot, just bondy jigging. He's going to come by any moment. Kanawha, Little Kanawha, get at the confluence. I mean, if you're on the Kanawha River, private message me. Do that. Okay, so I'll tell you some stuff. Just shoot me an email. I'll tell you where to go. But, yeah, let's do that.
Sure.
Sorry. So Jack says, hellhounds are my favorite baits. I use them so much, I will wear all the paint off of them. This past weekend, I had the bright idea to try and repaint them myself. Went down to the hardware store and grabbed a can of silver spray paint and did the deed. The next day, I was fishing with the spray painted lures and had the biggest fall of my life. And the fish appeared to be coming in hot. Then something went wrong and the fish pulled off right as I got behind it. It got behind the bait. Today, I opened my glide bait box and it reeked of spray paint. Does the smell of spray paint or epoxies affect baits?
Mm.
So, wow. Interesting. So,
yeah, I mean, it's probably not a positive thing.
Here's my deal.
Scent has a factor.
Well, Jay shilling for Dr. Juice again, everybody.
There you go.
I will take, say, like when we did these Krakens, right, Jay? The prototype Krakens. Back in the bait cave, I've got an airbrush station. And by airbrush station, I just spray airbrush paint everywhere over everything I own. And then I will take them and spray them with lacquer. And they'll dry on my back porch and I'll throw them the next day. No issue. I think smell and scent only matters in a cold water period. What I would do is make sure your bait is dry and cured, but it doesn't faze me at all. It doesn't freak me out at all. I've repainted so many baits where it's like, okay, the finish is knocked off this bait or it's cracked or whatever I got to do. And I spray paint it or like, there's so many baits I've hit with like Krylon black spray paint and taken the next day and caught a fish. So I don't think it's really registering smell-wise. It could. Maybe I know nothing. Maybe I know everything. Who knows? Don't overthink it. Just make sure the bait's dry. Essentially a bait will cure, or a spray paint or an epoxy will cure in X amount of time. don't attribute the fish peeling off to the bait. You know, don't be hesitant to repaint baits or to work on them. I do it all the time. It's just like, believe it or not, you know, with the Kraken, I never have Krakens, Jay. Do you know that? Everybody wants, Titans. Go. My apology. Yeah. I never have Titans. Like, everybody takes my Titans. Like, clients will be like, oh, will you do this? Put your name on my Titan or Titan. So I'm always running out of them, and I'm a sucker, and I'll hand you any. Like, when people are on my boat, and they're like, can I have that? I'll just go, yes.
And your hats, too.
And my hat. Oh, my God.
You ran out of hats when you were off here. Oh,
that's man. All. Like, the ongoing story of Stephen Paul hats is just ridiculous, and I appreciate it. Jay, you remember we were eating dinner in Monaco that time, and that guy walked over and asked for my hat?
Yeah.
So. I'm appreciative and try to be gracious. So it's just like, can I have a Titan off your boat? So I never have Titans. So I can't tell you how many times I've taken a Titan. It'll be like, it'll be whatever. It'll be the rainbow trout or it'll be perch or whatever. And I take it in the freaking garage and I spray paint it black because that's what's working for me at that time. And I catch a fish on it. So don't be afraid to repaint baits. Just let them dry. I don't think it's a scent thing. Maybe the fish just wasn't ready to go. So don't stress about that. It's sort of like the lion thing, Jay. Like, there's so many other things to worry about that we can't get hung up on that. Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Somebody just texted.
Yep.
Somebody just texted me a horrible picture. I apologize.
Probably Smitty again, huh?
No, it was Josh that makes the blade planer boards.
Ooh.
He texts me all kinds of goofy stuff.
Okay.
Anyway, Gary, I'm looking to get the perfect setup for trolling.
Yep.
I don't understand what the setup would be when it comes to line counters, when it comes to rods. I've watched Steve's videos, and I'm not a big fan of the Akuma reels because they're bulky. What's a better option and a good setup for a trolling rod line counter setup? Gary doesn't like my reels, Jay.
Oh, okay.
Well, Gary, yeah, you know
I
what?
Mean, yeah, a lot of those trolling reels are bulky. They're, I mean, they're huge. They're what? Heavy.
They're just
but you're not casting
they're
with
just
it.
Beat
you're just
me,
using it.
Beat, yep, beat me up on my trolling reels, Jay, anymore.
It's holding the line, and it's a platform to reel it in with. So
well,
as long as the reel holds up for you, I mean, there's other options. You can go a little bit smaller. There's some low-profile ones.
Here's the thing. Just clarifier, I'm a lefty.
Yeah.
And I troll left-handed reel. So you have Akuma convectors, which are the size of a frying pan. Or you have Shimano Takotas. And so people will go, your trolling reels are cheap and stupid, or you have $500 trolling reels and you're a dick. So that's my choice. So I go with the cheap and effective. I can have anything I want, but I don't want to be the guy that has $2,000 worth of trolling reels. Jay, what are some options like a good line counter? Obviously, what's the rod, the reel setup on a good trolling setup?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a shield rod in an 8-foot.
Which that's what
it's
I use.
A trolling rod, and it's specifically designed for the rigors and the abuse that you can that has to be dealt out with the trolling situation. So in cold water too, especially. You know, it's a good sucker rod, too, and it can be also used to throw crankbaits. A lot of people want more moderate-type action rods that are blended with a little bit fiberglass for durability and toughness, and that's what that trolling series is. St. Croix offers a nearly identical type model in terms of performance.
For triple the money.
No, it's maybe, you know, $20 more, but it's in the same price range. But the shield rod is... definitely number one choice. They're not expensive, and they work great. And I think the length is all purpose wise. 8-footer is perfect.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have this huge bulky, you know, like the 9.6 casting trend. it, you know, that's what the planer boards are for. If you need, you know, to get the presentation mm-hmm. outward more, you break out the boards. So, you know, as for reels, there's several Akuma. You know, again, if you're a right-hander, there's a lot more for the right-handers. Sorry, lefties. Shimano Takoda, that's an excellent one. That's not a really big reel. They're a little bit more money. I think they're about 200, but super high quality. I don't think that's a really heavy reel. Let me look it up here quick.
The Pin Rival.
No, it's not bad. It's like 16 ounces.
Yeah. And you got the Pin Rival.
That's getting down there close to, you know, casting reel. Yeah. Like a Shimano Tranks.
Right. But, so you have the Pin Rival.
Affordable. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is, what else do you have? Daiwa. They make Alexa. I think they make some left-handers. Sorry, everybody that's mad about my trolling reels. But they make there's plenty of Daiwa Alexa right-handed trolling reels. What else, Jay?
Yep. There's a couple different Daiwas. Alexa makes one. Saltus line. C-lines. Daiwa there. C-line. So there's a lot of options. AccuDepth. That's the one I was thinking of. That's a good reel, and I think those are $100.
There you go.
All you need. All,
or you're left-handed like me, and you just troll garbage.
Well, you force your clients and your guests to reel in left-handed occasionally. Here you go, reel it in.
Well, here's the problem.
You got to get used to the right-handed trolling setups when you hand it off.
No, sir. I did that for years. I had Abu did some line counters for a minute.
I remember.
And I had them all right-handed. I went, I have to set these, right? So every day I'm trolling, I'm dealing with that. And I'm going, this is uncomfortable for me. All these people have to do is reel a fish in. It's practically reeling a fish in on a spinning reel. What does it matter, right? Mm-hmm. You're not casting it. Just turn the handle, so... That's why I run the lefties. I'm a true lefty. It's not a casting or trolling thing. So I did that because it was just driving me nuts. If you ever saw me cast a right-handed rod, Jay, you would just die. It's watching a
I seen you try to play a right-handed guitar once.
It was... Anyway. I saw you trying to smoke a left-handed cigarette one time, Jay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure.
What they don't have random drug testing at the Muskie shop. What are you worried about? Not yet.
No, I mean, no. We let Tom in every day.
Every day, folks. He's just a scoundrel. Hold on.
Yeah.
Matt. What tactics do I need to use for late fall transition in Minnesota? I hear so much about sand and shallow reeds, but I'm not catching fish.
Okay.
That's an interesting thing. So, you know, that's a pattern in Minnesota, the reeds and the sand, right? Shallow stuff. A lot of guys running around, they got their side scan, and they're just buzzing through looking for fish. Excuse me. The Walmart sushi's catching up with me, by the way, Jay.
It's gross. Grim.
Why is it gross?
Nothing.
Just sushi is a spicy tuna roll from Walmart. Obviously, everywhere you go, you're going to be in a transitional period. There is that shallow bite. So we're talking about this shallow period of the year where it's a really great bite, burning bucktails, burning topwaters, right? Minnesota, you will find these fish shove up super shallow in the colder water period, right? But we need to be observant of that first break. We talked about this previous where those fish can be on the outside break and the outside forage break. Look for panfish, look for fish in that shallow zone. If you're not seeing some forage present or fish on side scan, I think that sand bite and that shallow reed bite, it's really important to be well-versed with the side scan. Side scan, I think, is pretty much in everybody's reach at this point. If you're spending money on bait, spend a little bit of money on electronics. But don't just beat a pattern because you've heard about it. Play the odds or play the actual conditions, right? So, excuse me, it bodes back to what I was saying about myself earlier. This is what I wanted to happen, but I had to make an assessment where we had to make a change, right? So be versatile in that regard. Make sure that we're paying attention to the actual conditions and we're willing to change things up. So if you're not scoring on that topwater blade bite or that shallow bite, get to that mid break, get to that open water bite. You know, those super shallow sand muskies might not be there the days you're hitting it. Jay, what would you say about, you know, changing things up for a pattern? I mean, you know, a pattern is a pattern is a pattern until it's gone. How do you make an assessment of what's happening on any given day?
In his situation, late fall in Minnesota or in general or over here?
I don't know, Jay. Just answer the question.
How do I make an assessment of, okay, well, forage location?
Yep.
Most lakes around here that I ever fish are weed based. I don't spend a ton of time on sand rock kind of lakes, which are generally clear. So the weed based lakes, condition of the weeds, you know, right now they're starting to go away. You know, we're looking at turnover, and when they go away, they will still be relevant for a while. So that's the key thing. That's that critical, like, hard to judge fall time. It's just like, okay, how much time do I spend here? Because they were here last week, you know. Old Donnie was out there and he got three, right, exactly, bay, you know, and it was they're up in 3 feet of water and most of the weeds were done. They were black. What the heck, you know? So go with that and give it a shot. Try it. See if you can locate anything. See if you get any kind of feedback at all. If you don't, you're going to have to use your locator or your senses and find out where the forage is and fish deeper. Because around here, that's inevitable and it's coming soon. So off the deeper breaks and the deeper edges. And, you know, bait's got to be 12 foot plus because that's where the fish are going to be and that's where all the bait is.
That's what I'm getting at. Is be observational. That's why.
You know, we were just talking about Minnesota. I was trying to tie that in because I guess I have a question. I mean, do you think that he was talking about, he said late fall in that question in Minnesota. I mean, is that relevant post turnover that those fish are still using that weird and crazy reed thing?
I don't know. Maybe it's.
I don't know either. I
didn't have enough information where he said I'm on Lake X, Y, and Z or this. Where you know, we're trying to answer things to the best of our ability, but here's the deal. If it ain't working, it ain't working. And that's why I threw it in your lap that way. And I sort of said, well, make an assessment. I'm not trying to be a dick, but I'm just going, what do you do? Check mid, check shallow, check deep, right? So if you come out, you got your Saturday and you got your opportunity to fish and it ain't cracking by 10 a.m., do something different. Don't belabor a pattern. Today, I made a mistake. I belabored a pattern until the middle of the day where if I made an assessment in the first 3 hours ago, the bait is deep, the bait is deep, the bait is deep. And I said it 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 and I didn't present deep. And I paid the price by not getting what I wanted to happen. And I knew better, but I wouldn't change because I was doing so well for the last 4 days. Right.
That is the most common way of looking at things because we all do that. We've all done that.
Which is whether you've been on the lake or you're, like you said, Morty was smacking them yesterday.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Be confident in your presentation. If you're confident you can work baits X, Y, and Z, and you're confident that you're competent in boat control, but it's not happening, at what point do we cut it off and say we're going to do something different? That's where I always talk and make an assessment.
Right. Tough call.
Tough call. Make an assessment based on the forage, on the what you're seeing observationally from animal activity or lack thereof or bait or forage placement and augment your game plan. That's what we have to do. Today, admittedly so, I was late to the party before we had action. I made a change up, you know, little over halfway in the day today. Boom, big fish is right there on a bait.
Well, that's what we're all trying to figure out. That is the most common thing in musky fishing is just like nothing's happening right now. When do I make a change and what change do I make?
Well, which is this is Gary. He listened to the podcast. He's a good dude. You know, I was saying this is what has been happening. And it's like the investors. Like, okay, so I like money. Money is my favorite thing outside of muskie fishing, right? And when you're an investor, you hear all the time, past results are not indicative of future returns. Right? Past results are not indicative of future returns.
Yeah.
So what happened yesterday has nothing to do with today. We have to make an assessment of the current market. We have to gauge the muskie market in real time and go, what do we need to do? Forage base or other fish is the best option. I talk about it in Next Level Muskie Fishing, the book, where we need to look, have a 3-point check, and we look at 1, 2, 3. What got me today is I found shallow bait and I found deep bait. The shallow bait was stagnant, Jay. It blew my mind. You could have came back at any time and the shallow bait would not move. The deep bait was in disarray.
Interesting.
Which was odd, right? So shallow forage, and I'm talking shad schools that are pretty large.
Okay.
Stagnant. The deep bait was in disarray. I feel like I fell on my face until about halfway through the day where I went, there's activity deep and there's motion to deep bait. Shallow bait is ineffective. Therefore, we need to fish deep. Once we started fishing deep, boom. Right? So I wasted half a day of my life on a boat with nothing happening because I was so resolute on a shallow bite. Once I made that augmentation and I changed things up and I addressed deep forage, things happened. That was the difference where we're so hung up on what we think is or should be happening that we find it hard to make augmentation. So just because Morty freaking caught a fish last week in shallow doesn't matter. And this is overarching of the question with Minnesota, where we're well past that, right? We need to look at what we're dealing with in any given moment. So if we're making an assessment, it's interesting. When we have a stratification, this parlays into turnover in some regard, right? Turnover is berserk. Fish could be anywhere. Now we're looking at forage. Observe forage. Is that forage tightly compact? Is it very happy? Or is it blown out? If it's not blown out and things aren't happening and forage is like sort of scattered and there's no aggressive thing going on there, are there actively feeding predators there? So we need to look at it from that regard. One more. Marty. What quick strike rig should I use? I see so many options, but I'm unsure of what works the best. I've never caught a fish on live bait. When I look and get my first sucker fish, what is the best quick strike rig? Well, we just did a video on this, Jay.
Yeah, that's true.
Very short. Yeah. Check it out. Muskie Shop, the YouTube channel, Muskie Shop TV. There's a quick strike.
How to Fish Musky Suckers, I believe. Called. Yeah.
There it is. Get on there and wax eloquent about how to fish musky suckers. Talk about the different rigs. I like a really simple rig, which is like a 3-0 treble hook through the mouth with a rubber disc and one in the back. Works for me. The more components, the more convoluted you get, the weirder it gets. Keep a simple rig. Learn how to rig the suckers. Watch that video. We go into depth about it, but you know, something is going to retain a hook in the thing's mouth. Most of the time when they really hit these things, they're going to head shoot them. So I like a hook sticking out of the mouth, but I don't mean that single hook. I mean a treble, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One out of the back. If you're really like light touch on how you hook these fish, you can really conserve them. Let's say you go out for 2 days. If you keep an aerator, we talk about Engel coolers or Frabel coolers. We got a good equipment there and on hand. We can keep these things aerated and cool. Cold suckers or lively suckers?
Yeah, as it gets colder here with the air temps and the water temps.
Mm-hmm.
I know guys that have had suckers, handful of suckers, say they put in their live well and they transport them into a cooler at night, or they keep them in their live well, sometimes with no aerator going. And as it gets really cold, those things can stay alive and pretty frisky for a week.
I mean, the real trick with the sucker is the bottom line, cold water, aeration, you know, whether you can keep them or not, just pump the air in there, pump the cold water. If you're struggling with temps, a little bit of ice, you can get them too hot, but you can't get them too cold, Jay.
Yeah, easy with those oxygen tablets, too, if you ever try those.
Right, yeah, that's unnatural. Right.
Yeah.
Above where there's the heater in my horrible hotel room. Just reminds me it's cold and dirty in here. But, you know, a bubbler, a Frabel bubbler or whatever, just pump them full of oxygen. You can't over-oxygenate them. And keep them cold and you'll be fine. Make sure when you're transporting between spot to spot that they're not sort of pinning them at the top of a live well or at the top of a cooler, right? Make sure if you're using a sinker or whatever, the rig's allowing them to be down in the bottom of the cooler. I've seen guys like, oh my goodness, my sucker's dead. Well, he was pinned up at the top for 20 minutes while we moved, right? So be aware of that. As far as the right rig, again, the simpler rigs are better, in my opinion. I've never been a nose rig guy. Sorry. I love single hook rigs in the nose or a treble hook rig in the nose that use a little rubber disc. Check out the video where we did the guide to the fishing suckers for muskies. Sharp hooks, really stout rod, the 8-foot shield rod, which is a trolling rod or a live bait rod. And just the second he starts running with it, set the hook.
Hammer the hook.
Hammer.
Yes.
Hammer.
You got to break that rig free.
Yeah. That's probably the best advice is there's not a hook set. There is a drop the rod and you light him the frick up. I talk about in the video. So, Jay, we're almost to the cold water period. We're getting there. It's getting interesting. Mixed bag across the habitat range. Guys, if you're struggling right now, be versatile. If anything I can tell you, we've been talking about for weeks, be open to versatility throughout the course of the day.
Yep.
Shallow, mid-deep, shallow, mid-deep, shallow, mid-deep. Think about it. Plan your day around it. Be aware of bite windows as far as like solar lunar things. Don't get hung up on one thing because the muskies aren't hung up on one thing. They're not all shallow right now. We talked about if you missed the exciting fall barrage where it's butt blades and bucktails, it might be over. It might come back. Be versatile in what you're willing to do. Be smart about what you're doing. Jay Bird, say good night.
Appreciate y'all.
Later.
Podcast that will jumpstart my heart, cause then a hook set on the top water. Where's 360? I've waited all day. Gotta get my fix each and every way. Waited this long, now stop debating. He will be back, although and operating. Know you got a job, must be 360, but the podcast late and complicating. So the muskies just won't let him be, or let me be me, so let me see. The podcast rocks me every week, but it feels so empty without Steve. Looks like a job for Steve, so everybody just follow me, cause we need a little controversy, cause it feels so empty without 360. Now this looks like a job for Steve, so everybody just follow me, cause we need a little controversy, cause it feels so empty without 360.